to another broadcast of Project Urantia on the Artist First Radio Network. What if Earth had a separate history than we know about? One person, in my opinion, that knows more about that than just about anyone on the planet is Michael in Maui. Hi, Michael.
Hi, Z-Man.
Glad to have you with us tonight. Michael, you are the man of the hour, and thank you again for all the time you put into this show.
Oh, you're welcome. Let's bring your level up a little bit. Couldn't quite hear you.
Okay, let's make some adjustments. How about now?
That's a little better.
Well, Michael, we get new listeners every week. Maybe we should at some point in time do a recap show for people who don't have to listen to 160 shows to catch up. So one of these days we'll do that. But until then, so anyway, what's been going on the last couple of weeks you would like to share with us tonight?
Well, the last couple of weeks has been seemingly consistent with somewhat of the news that's been going on in the world. And I've been timing the reception of what information I get until it, you know, actually gets out into the public. And what I'm talking about is celestial information. In other words, they give me images, sometimes visions, sometimes dreams, and sometimes what I call dim images, which, in other words, I can't see very clearly until I close my eyes. These are ones that kind of fall in line almost with additional sense, but it seems to be panning out in a sense of about a month ahead of time most of the time, and some of the more powerful visions are literally years ahead of time and do come forward, and they're reminders of what's happening and what the celestials are actually, you know, monitoring, and in some ways are influencing. And some of the ways that are used, of course, are those who are in positions of making decisions, decision makers, or people who at least can influence decisions, have an internal guidance system in which the celestials gave me a much more definite point in terms of what we have beyond the concept of conscience, and that would be the divine fractal, which I call a divine fractal, and which can be called as a thought adjuster, which is what the Urantia book calls this bit of divinity that is implanted within us. And many as possible are invited to, of course, all humanity is invited to tune in and actually become receptive to, as well as working with the divinity within us. That's the great program that will bring our civilization into extremely high levels. However, our contribution to this has been our free wills and our own creativity. Although many of the things that we seem to discover are actually being rediscovered, because they are, you know, in my experience with the celestials. And to give a brief background is that my encounters with the celestials did start from a very early age, I believe from pre-birth on through some memorable instances when I was still in the crib, and then finally accumulating in a very, very exciting trip into the to explore the environment in which the celestials are involved in, which is the heavens, you might say. They live in divine places, or you might say places which are cities, literal worlds that are constructed many places within outer space. And the closest one here was orbiting Saturn, and that's where I went for a type of education, a type of informational sharing, and one in which measured perhaps even our status as human beings, where we stand. One of the things that in that encounter that was especially pleasurable, I guess, it was happy that I didn't all of a sudden fall down and worship them as gods. In fact, I was looking at them and saying, how dare, because I wanted to contact God, the God source. And I sat out there in the backyard and basically cried out one night early in the evening for, you know, God to make himself real or send some emissary or someone to let me know about him. Well, anyway, it ended up with Tan and Nella, who happened to have been involved with others. This was Riley Martin, and in which we have had on our show, which is Nancy Leader, also, and others, in terms of taking it to this world, orbiting Saturn, which has got a name. It's called the New Jerusalem. And I said, as far as that name was concerned, I said, we have a Jerusalem on Earth, on the home planet. And I said, it's Jerusalem, but it's pointing, both Jerusalem and the name Jerusalem point to the same Jerusalem, which is basically the capital of our system of planets that we are a part of, over 600 planets. And that was where a lot of the information comes from. And then they did some operations and brought me up to a higher level of information reception, and as well as, you know, communication back and forth, which happens beyond the speed of light. So anyway, in any case, I've been timing these informational things, and they are not, you know, precise in terms of timing. So sometimes when I receive them, I kind of have to only guess. But in the recent ones that I've had, we're in concern with a nuclear program, and which is timed out probably with Iran's nuclear program, and now it's all in the news. And now today, it's early this morning, as a matter of fact, I received information of a tiger rising in strength. So there's apparently it's going to be another leader coming up out of the Middle East someplace that's pretty strong. So we'll see who that is anyway. So that's a little bit of how things stand right now there, Z-Man. Hello?
Oh, sorry. We're having a little difficulty with one of our microphones this evening. Are we all right there?
Yeah.
We received some feedback when we logged in. Tiger, that is it Pakistan? Is it India? Is it Afghanistan? Is it Iran, Iraq?
Well, you know, one of the things about tigers, you know, we know about lions. You know, lions in the Middle East are typical of the Middle East animal, African animal. But tigers tend to come from, you know, Asia, Southeast Asia, things like that. Yet, and are not, you know, endemic of that area, that continent, Euro-Asia. I mean, Euro-Africa area. And I'm not sure what they mean, but in the interest presently happening right now, as I was being driven in a sense to explore Southeast Asia a lot, so I did a lot of traveling around Southeast Asia, gaining just rubbing shoulders with the people, and then of course Obama is there right now, and things about Southeast Asia as far as it being a powerful influence on the generation of our economic engine worldwide, as far as the economic engine of our corporate status too, because there are productive wing is over there. It's not so much in the Middle East. As a matter of fact, the Middle East cannot manufacture. They say they have to go to China to find, you know, goods to sell in Iraq or, you know, in the Middle East. You know, these merchants will travel that far to go over there and get product from Southeast Asia. So I'm not sure how this rise of this particular type of individual, a tiger, would have any influence in the Middle East.
We are already receiving emails. Folks, just send your emails to dj@artistfirst.com. We'll get to them a few minutes into the program here. You think it's just sheer coincidence that the History Channel, TLC, and Science Channel, Discovery Channel are all running programs about ancient history, alien visitation? Is it, seems like a convenient time to start running those shows. Don't you agree?
Well, one of the things that I was made aware of, the very individuals, these higher order beings, the celestial beings, who I promised to help, one of their tasks is one of their real assignments is literally praying into the consciousness of the planet. They're like influencing our thoughts, trying to for us to get kind of like hunger or wonder, or get overly curious about certain subjects, and because of that, we start tuning into one higher awareness, and one in which we need to tune into, because if we stay domiciled within the technology and the mindset of the 20th century, the progress in which this 21st century is scheduled to bring us into would be hindered again. We're supposed to have been, I guess, in the 20th century technologies, the 20th century-like events back before Christ came. So in the BC times, we should have been running around, if things were progress in the elevation of our society, and instead of being interrupted by those who have fallen celestials, who wanted to be worshipped, who wanted to think, for us to think of them as gods, and they set us back that long time. But we're now scheduled to make the higher move, and that's probably one of the biggest changes that we'll have to do. And one of them is to realize that we're not alone, and then to accept the higher responsibility that comes with knowing that, which is to be actually become great citizens of the universe as a whole. So they have previously sent ambassadors, which have implanted both philosophies and religions in the world, which have, of course, become somewhat misinterpreted, somewhat, but in the most sense, the most truest sense, it drives us out to one basic reality, and that one is accepting God as real. And those who do not tend to find themselves in essentially a non-meaningful life.
Well, let's get to a couple of emails, Michael. How about... Here's a simply one. Michael, when we die, will we remember what we've forgotten of our previous existences?
If you've had previous existences, which were essentially higher than mortal, in other words, you became mortal in order that you might ascend past the stage in which you were. So these types of memories would be brought back. So you would know where you were before you even became a mortal human being. However, there are so many, the vast majority, much larger, over 90%, I think, of people here on the planet who have gained their soul, essentially the reality of life, the higher level of being above the animals as a human being for the first time here on the planet. So there would be, of course, with that kind of origin, there would be nothing to remember, in former life.
All right, dear Michael, what is a descending soul? Do they no longer require to incarnate as mortals to grow spiritually, but do so to help others or to gain a promotion on high? Are the rest of us ascending souls, such as incarnating repeatedly to grow?
Bring your level up, and I got about 70% of what you said there.
I apologize, listeners. We are having some technical difficulties with our signal back to Michael. Should I read you the question again?
Yeah, I missed a bunch of it.
Are we okay with the signal now?
It's still low.
How about now?
Okay.
Okay, that might help. What is a descending soul? Do they no longer require to incarnate as mortals to grow spiritually, but do so to help others or to gain a promotion on high? Are the rest of us ascending souls, such as incarnating repeatedly to grow?
Okay, the descending soul essentially is a descendant being who is coming from a higher level of origin. In order for them to gain experience and wisdom, need to come down to levels in which there is the pressures of mortality, you might say, being mortal, of the economies of scarcity. They've challenged these individuals, and then also whether such of them will, on their free will, become aids to the ascension process, helping many individuals to themselves discover their progress, their ascending progress plan. And it, which is different for every, in fact, every single individual has a different pathway, but on the same directional path. In other words, ascending. And it doesn't involve being lost. Many times, I mean, it means being found and being and finding direction. And being lost is sometimes a problem in which descending souls find themselves in, because of the loss of many times the prior experience and memories. So their character would come, but many times the experiential skills and learnings that are embodied within the mechanism of their being may not have been incarnated into the human machine, the human body, the human life, the life we have in here. So as a result, it's a challenge for the descending souls as much as it is for the ascending ones whose origin here and find life here and look for purpose and receive the indwelling adjuster, the divine fractal, and find that privilege. Many of those who fell or descend with purpose lose an adjuster. They don't have an adjuster anymore. They come without, and as a result, are themselves having pre-education, pre-adjustment, and many times find themselves as becoming very, very important in terms of helping the progress of ascension, of ascending beings, helping them. So it's still a challenge for both directions, especially. It's never a point where a descending soul is not going to find challenge in becoming mortal.
Our next email is a question I was thinking of earlier today. Tony, you and I are on the same page here. Basically what it is if we were to ask one of our celestial friends, will hundreds of millions of people die in the calendar year 2012? And if they knew for a fact that would happen, would they actually tell us or would they not tell us?
When it comes down to something as challenging as that, is the same thing as I when the great earthquake and tsunami hit Japan, I was pretty much unaware of it. And when it happened, I asked him, why didn't you let me know? And at that point, I was in Osaka. I was away from, you know, all the activity, but just studying the people of Japan at the time. And then I received knowledge that an earthquake was going to hit my area, a 6 point something was going to hit, was pretty strong. And then with that knowledge, I couldn't do much. I really didn't know much. So when it finally hit, then I said, well, it's supposed to be about this level, about, you know, and I better get out of this place. So I ended up being the only person that, you know, escaped out of the building, because the buildings were designed pretty much earthquake-proof where I was, and found myself on the street with a few other people. So it's sometimes not going to be much of an advantage in terms of what people can do, because that was the explanation. It was a practical demonstration of having pre-knowledge on this, so it didn't do me much good. So having this, where would it be? What would it localize? If it's thousands of people, that's a small segment of the population of the world, yet significant in an area, where would that be? Sometimes it would be pointed at. One of the individuals that has been good in able to pick up a lot of this information is Nancy Leader. She happens to specialize in that area, which is the physical or the geologic problems that our planet is facing right now. And it ends up equipping some people. You know, there's certain readiness that we need to have in case we no longer have the function of our civilization in place. It just stops. You know, traffic stops. Electricity stops. Water stops. We need to have some fairly basic things. And then when they can be restarted again, we'll be just fine. Because I haven't been given that information concerning a complete stop of civilization. More of a reset, and especially a reset of the way we do things in terms of finance, economy, and the engine of progress behind all of our civilization right now. That's going to go through a kind of a special pressure to reset it. And I think we can understand it now. That was given to me years ago. And I'm watching it happen and unfold right now. So in the case of pre-knowledge, sometimes it really doesn't do any good.
You are listening to Project Urantia on the Artist First Radio Network. We're going to take a break. It's the bottom of the hour. Send your emails to dj@artistfirst.com. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Artist First World Radio Network, artistfirst.com. If you are an author or independent recorded artist, we'd love to hear from you. Simply follow the links we've provided at artistfirst.com to schedule your interview. For your enjoyment and pleasure, we would like to tell you there are thousands of hours available free on demand at artistfirst.com. So get out there on your social network sites and let everyone know about the free MP3 formatted information provided. You can always send questions or comments to dj@artistfirst.com to get involved with the conversation. If you have questions for Michael, Project Urantia, and the topic, we'd be happy to address those questions. So stay tuned. We'll be back with more of Project Urantia.
To thank everybody who has supported this program all of these years. We hope we're doing the world a service. You guys make up your own minds. We put out the information. Think for yourselves. Decide what's best for you. Michael, on the one of those red-eye channels I was staring at before I fell asleep last night, was talking about an item, and I don't know if it was called the Carvarian Bible that was written by the Egyptians and supposedly a race of civilization some 15,000 years prior. Have you ever heard of that book?
I did hear of something like it, but I'm not, you know, I didn't do much research in it.
Well, my hearing ain't all that good after being a professional musician for 30 some years, but I will be looking it up, but what the program said was there was this document called the whatever it was Bible that was written by the Egyptians, the earliest Egyptians, and a civilization that may have dated back as far as 15,000 BC. And they talked about a horrible event where a planet maybe as large as Jupiter flies through the solar system, and its gravitational problems cause the extinction of most civilizations, including the Egyptians. They talked about something that actually happened to them. Now, if you had a planet that was dark in color, in other words, maybe it was made up of coal, it was black, could you see that with a telescope?
No, of course not. It would be very difficult to see, because of course it is not luminescent, it's reflective, yeah, so it doesn't generate its own light. Well, unlike the New Jerusalem, which does, has a luminous surface.
What about other satellite detection systems? What about infrared? If something was dark black and matte in color and flying at you from across, from like coming from sort of the direction of the sun, it would be like looking into car headlights. You don't see anything past that, and you see very little in front of it. In other words, could something of that size, if it was actually coated in that type of a surface, could it get this far without being detected?
Yes, I believe so. There has, however, been the use of infrared, which has proven to be informative in some of the dark bodies, but not necessarily the answer in finding them. So this is something that technologies that we have are, you know, for near Earth, very near Earth, are being explored, you know, using, you know, sort of a flashlight theory. Instead of flashlights, of course, we'd use a laser beam to find these, you know, just kind of like scan the skies of them.
What worries me is the guy that shows up representing the astronomers and says, there is absolutely no chance that we have missed anything in our solar system. This cannot possibly ever happen this year.
Well, it's one of the challenges. I know we have an observatory here on the island of Maui, on the top of Mount Haleakala, specifically for that purpose. And I've watched some of the experiments that come out of adjoining observatories that were very interesting, which use lasers. And talking with the astronomers there, who came out and just told me, watch my eyes. what they were doing. And it's interesting because the technology of lasers from that time, which is almost 20 years ago, has made giant leaps in terms of what can be done. So near Earth, I believe there is a lot of things going on. But as far as further out, much further out, in terms of our solar system and the invasions of any interplanetary body, extraplanetary body coming in, even not working with the plane of the ecliptic, the disc-like plane which our planets follow, would have some difficulty in finding a object which has, like you say, a light-absorbing surface. Black, basically, is what you're mentioning, which is a light-absorbing color. And a surface can be even more absorptive if it is kind of rough, you might say. Or obscured even with a type of atmosphere which is reflective inward. In other words, it'll let light in but won't let light back out. These things will be very, very hard to detect. You have to use a type of radar or LIDAR to find them. In other words, shooting them through with some kind of to get some kind of reflection off of them. And of course, that requires pinpoint scanning or just domain scanning, just sort of scanning an area, which is amazing. As I said, the technology of our lasers today, just being able to just scan, is fantastic.
Well, I've seen the argument that the Sphinx may be tens of thousands of years old based on its erosion patterns. And if this... what do we call? I wish I knew the exact name of it. Sorry, listeners. The Carville or Carbill Bible. I mean, they're trying to talk about, seemingly trying to talk about something that happened in their ancient past. And
yes,
history thinks there was a big gap in the early Egyptian civilization, maybe thousands of years between the civilization that we see the monuments from. And the Sphinx may have been a piece of the first civilization. And, of course, they're speculating that under the paw of the Sphinx is the truth of what's been going on and a record of what's been happening. But fascinating. I mean, sit down at a kitchen table in the morning when you're having toast and try to come up with an explanation as to why people thousands upon thousands upon thousands of years ago would write books about utter fantasy. What would be the point? I mean... you either have to think they thought they were believing what they were writing about or they were a bunch of lunatics. What do you think, Michael?
Well, one of the things that happened, of course, was that if you had a problem, a civilization that fell, let's say, for one reason or another, people would go into survival mode. Now, in a survival mode, there are things you drop out of your hand from that are no longer useful. And some of those are simply the ideas of writing, historic writing and things like that. They tend to follow more of a pathway of spoken word as the conveying story. So many of these stories are legendary and go throughout the world. So it's not unusual that, there would be a remnant of the literate people who would leave a small bit of information here or there, while the vast majority of survivors lose or never even gained real knowledge on real education. They may have had rudiments of it, in which we find our... writing and symbols, the ideas for it, and putting them down in terms. The Sumerian, of course, being one of the oldest, is declared by the Celestials is definitely not being the oldest. They were probably the easiest remnant to find because their media of information was clay, which is basically something that doesn't decay. But there were many others who wrote on paper, which just disappeared. And this is one of the big problems of earlier history. Others show results of trying to regain that through the effects of art and painting, but not necessarily writing. So, yeah, what happened, according to our present discoveries, as well as the celestials themselves saying, was this big halt, this problem with our ascension progress for our planet. And it was about that time, about between 15 to 10,000 years ago, that it kind of fall apart.
I must admit, I have not heard of this document until yesterday.
Well, it's pretty exciting. There's, you know, looking back at the old things and realizing that there's certain remnants that are being found today, and having, you know, up to the minute, you might say, information coming from the celestial sources that tie it together and do say that it's true. We are a planet that can be challenged again. But I hold in confidence that challenge that happened way back was something that was allowed for. And presently, they are very much involved in preventing a complete disaster or annihilation or this total destruction of our civilization and our technologies today, because they are basically coming into a type of adoptable level in which we as human beings will be able to interface in a much easier way, in a much smoother way into the technologies that the celestials have, without falling at the feet and worshiping the guys, you know, essentially, you know, we find ourselves at a level in which we are, as I said, we have to become good citizens of a greater celestial environment and citizenship, and which includes how to interface into higher technologies. And one in which the celestials, or at least the celestials that I have been with, is the regeneration and the resurrection chambers, the ones basically that say life as we know it, as mortal life, is able to continue far beyond that into higher levels of life, and a type of technology that was shown and demonstrated to me. Of course, I didn't use it because they said one of the penalties of it would be that my physical body would die.
That's a pretty big choice to make on the spot, wouldn't you?
Yeah, pretty big choice. But, you know, and because of that, I would, although having a different body, would not be a true citizen of the planet Earth anymore. Yeah.
I just heard today on NPR that they have been able to manipulate a gene from the stomach of a mouse and increase its lifespan by 50%.
Yes.
That would mean you'd live to be about 130 would be the average life expectancy. 130!
One of the things I often wondered about in my studies with, it says Bible and the Book of Revelation, was in the last days men shall seek death, and death shall flee them. And this was an interesting statement. I kind of wondered about that. And of course, being challenged with the knowledge that there is technology to give, you know, a person basically eternal life, and then realizing that there is right now, and doing a little bit more research, and where that technology that we have in place would put people. Now, if you got a lot of money, somebody could give you the ability to essentially have your cells regenerate. The problem with that is that's exactly what cancer cells are. And essentially, they'll be giving you a whole body cancer. So can you imagine being able, you're having a body that will just continue, not continue living, but basically in a cancerous state. I think that would be pretty much the answer for the idea of what does this scripture point to. And it points to a technology in the latter days, which we are at the cusp of being able to just give anybody who's got enough money, would involve something like that, where you can essentially live beyond the normal lifespan, but with basically a cancerous body, everything being cancer.
What a yo-yo it must be for listeners to tune into our show where I say something like, hey, they've just discovered how to extend the lifespan of a mouse by 50%, and then you say, hey, eventually you'll beg me to kill, I will beg you to kill me.
Yes.
I've lived too long. As Riley used to mention, even the Dan and Ella, their race, after, I think he said the longest was 40,000 years, they just say enough's enough. It's time not to regenerate. We just can't imagine that, having such a short life expectancy. How can we ever comprehend not wanting to continue?
Well, you know, that's the problem with an immediate ascension into the light body, the body which is basically composed of light and lost its physical attributes. It would take stages, and many times a life in the body of such length, in which would prepare a person for basically eternal consciousness in a body of light, indestructible and continuous. And one, of course, which would allow for great transition throughout the universe, which is continually expanding right now.
How about another email? Dear Michael, please, I think this is referring to the mothership. Please speak about the holes under the wings you saw in the landing area and what they are for. That's from Pakal.
Okay, Pakal, one of the things that we have now found others having seen here, as far as this huge mile-wide, approximately that, V-wing craft, dark gray, you know, black. To me, it was black. And on the underside, as we walked down, I was always above us. It's just that this hangar was so huge. I mean, it's just amazing how big this hangar was. And it was just floating out there. And then I noticed these ports on the bottom. Immediately, the ports gave me the concept that they were not thrust ports. They're not ports for, like, you know, engines to push down. There's something about them that made me think, well, this is to take things in. And I was in a level of, like, looking at my guides and then asking them that, what is this for? Looking at these holes, and is it for, like, getting the materials? He said, you don't need to go anywhere to get the materials you need. He says, yes, we're able to harvest all the materials you need in the area. It may be, you know, just from Saturn's rings, or maybe some other way in which they collect, absorb, or even make materials that we're able to build the New Jerusalem, that big building of the celestial abode out there. But they didn't discount, when I was thinking that it was for, like, picking up or harvesting or ports to take things in. And I asked them, is this for, like, mining? And then they said to me, in direct response, it said, in a way. They did make note that I should understand that we shouldn't panic the planet, that there will be a great harvest or a time in which they may be need for a particular zone, a particular area or areas to be rescue mission proposed. So kind of great rake or these holes would be used to bring in gave me the idea of vacuuming, like, you know, suck in, but it wasn't, you know, actual, like a vacuum cleaner sucking in air. It's more sucking in, essentially, the essence of who we are, our souls, and that may include bodies that have been somehow structurally changed from a external source, or people who already vacated their bodies, essentially wandering around with having their souls moving around. So that'd be one of the things that could be. But they're definitely there under the wings. And I did feel they were not thrust ports to push out from, or energies out from, and it was the other way, bringing in versus pushing out.
We have several more email questions. We're going to try to fit them in the time we have allowed. Michael, you spoke a week or so ago about being a descending person to Urantia. We know from the Urantia book there are many forms of descending sons, spelled S-O-N-S. Michael was such as a bestowal Avonal. Machiaventa was one such as a Melchizedek. Adam and Eve were such as the Prince Calegastia. Which order of descending sons are you? What portion of the Urantia book may we study more regarding your particular assignment? Being a descending son does answer why you do understand so much and speak the language of the universe. Thank you again, Michael, for your work and service. Len McKee.
Well, Len, thank you for the question. However, I am not at this time privileged to let you know what I am descendant of, because of the mystery would hinder many of the people of thinking that if they must be of an ascending order in order to attain. This is the same thing that the descending Avonal, our Avonal, which is happens to be the Creator Son, Michael, or Jesus Christ, had. Basically, he had a hard time telling the ascending sons, the mortals of the land, that they could essentially do what he did if they had a ascending way, and that would cause them to essentially learn, acquire the higher gifts of an expanding consciousness and an ascending divinity, essentially becoming more and more divine. And that's the reason I won't say, and I can't say, because in reality, everyone will, from this point, can ascend to a level which is quite high, extremely high, as an ascending sun, and one in which equates to nearly the Melchizedek level. So that would be something that it would be very, very injurious, I guess, for me to tell, you know, people what letter or order, because it's better for you to feel that if you know someone like Jesus Christ as having such a great descending position, descending so far down, and yet saying that we can actually do what he did. And this is the same thing. You don't have to be such a high ascendant being to do these miracles. I'm saying that you will be able to do these things given the opportunity to be implanted with the gifts that come from aligning yourself with that divine fractal within you, and that tunes into higher consciousness faster than speed of light thought, and essentially really wonderful place in being. And I think that would be probably the best, you know, best answer I can give you without actually telling you.
We're going to fit two more questions in the last 120 seconds. First of all, Pakal, we would love to have Curtis Cooperman on the program. Curtis, this is Z-Man at Artist First. Please figure out a time where you can join us on an upcoming show. We'll have you on any time you are available. And we have one last email. Michael, haven't we given all alien races an advantage over humans due to the digital data we have transmitted worldwide? Aren't we making their job of understanding our collective consciousness and global situation easier? How do you feel about shared technology? Many thanksgivings to you and your family. Tiger.
Well, Tiger, that's very interesting, and you might say they have to go and interface their equipment. Their technology and equipment is so far advanced, so different from what we're using. It's much easier for them to just go get what they need from us, and then if they want to tune in to our, you know, they want to go get themselves an iPod or whatever, iPhone, they just go get one, you know. It's that simple, because the little example I have of that would be of needing to use the bathroom. The only thing that was very unique about it was that there wasn't any door. When I passed it, I kind of had the desire to use it, and there it went. It opened up, and there inside was the wash basin and a toilet that was exactly like we find here, Western style. And the interface into the wall and stuff was very different, though. It molded in, sort of like grew in place. Then I asked them, you know, that's just like what we have on Earth. And it says, yes, it is, because that's where we got it. That was a very simple explanation.
Of course.
And when it comes down to digital stuff, they'll get it, whatever they need. They'll just walk over and get it, just buy it, you know, whatever. You know, it's not that hard for them to do.
You know, I'm glad I did not ask this at the beginning of the program, because it probably would have taken us in a different direction. But do you think that the failure of the Super Committee and the fact that the United States is going to take huge economic cuts in January of 2013 will make any difference? Will we all be smoldering cinders by then?
Actually, when it comes right down to it, it's just the factors that are playing within the banking system. People right now, you know, they don't necessarily have to function within the banking system. Only if you're locked in there by the debt obligations that an individual has. But going into countries in the Southeast Asia like that, the majority of the people are not that deeply involved in the banking system or functioning under debt. They're free spirits. They function with basically a hand-to-mouth type of existence, but it's a happy one. And it's very happy, and it's very friendly, and each individual pulls their load plus shares, very freely shares. That was interesting to see. And I don't think their religious bias made that much difference. Maybe their approach, maybe their outward appearance was sort of probably an important factor in some of the Islamic women, but the men, I couldn't tell them the difference, but the women, yes. But as far as total collapse, I think we won't see that, because there's just that human nature about it. So if you're looking in societies which, you know, are not so locked into the financial system as we are, The fallback would be to a time in which people help people and get along. And having little bits of gold and, you know, chopped up pieces are good for buying a little bit of groceries here and there. These kinds of things still can happen. So I don't think there'll be a total devastation, or cinder, you might say, lost society.
There might be a few of us left over. You're so kind. You're all going to die, but a few of you.
The rich guys will get, like, you know, like, you bought a window already.
I prefer shotguns. I got several. I dare you to rob my house. Michael, we only have a few seconds to mention that on every broadcast, I want to never fail to mention that Michael does this program. He has nothing to sell. We do not accept advertising on this program. We put out this information absolutely for free. You make your decision whether you think we are completely crazy or maybe there's something going on here. Michael, thank you so much. You do this because you promised your celestial friends that you would. You are a man of your word, and in this day and age, that's kind of hard to find. Thank you again, Michael, for everything you do for this station.
Oh, sure. You're certainly welcome, and thank you for allowing the avenue for their information to get out to the world.
Stay tuned, everybody. CBS News is coming your way in about 10 seconds. You're listening to Artists First World Radio.